Well, a heads up for commuters traveling along Kearns Boulevard starting later this month. A major sewer rehabilitation problem is beginning and probably won't be finished for months. In the studio with details, I have the director of the Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District, Mike Lures. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So maybe all those sewer pipes we've been seeing planted along by the high school isn't just for that underground tunnel, but for your project?
Actually, the pipelines associated with our project haven't been put out yet.
Okay.
So what we have is a large wastewater line that collects all the wastewater from most of Park City underneath Kearns Boulevard, and it goes all the way out to our water reclamation facility out at Silver Creek. It's about 7 miles long. This pipeline was installed in 1985. It's a concrete pipe and showing its age. It's a lot of sewer gases will corrode concrete pipes. I might mention that we no longer use these type of pipelines for wastewater, but in any event, we need to put a new pipe inside the old pipe. We put a liner in it, and this is a multi-year project. The phase that we're here to talk about today will involve putting a liner inside the pipeline, starting from Comstock Drive eastward out to Richardson Flat Road, about 1.4 miles. And the work will start up this week with the heavy work really kicking off about June the 6th. And what you'll see is we'll be pumping the wastewater out of a manhole, pump that wastewater into a pipeline, a temporary pipeline that will lay on top of the ground. And then the liner will be inserted, and then a temporary pipeline, a bypass, as we call it, will be removed. And using this technique is much quicker and less expensive than having to dig up the old pipe and install the new line, which would literally take months to do. The phase, again, from Comstock out to Richardson Flat should be completed in 30 days.
Okay. So what kind of liner do you put in it that's better than concrete?
It's a synthetic folded fabric, and you either pressurize it or you put water in it, and it presses against the inside of the original pipe, and then you either put hot water in it or use ultraviolet light, and it hardens it in place. So you just kind of roll it off into the pipe, you pressurize it so that it's pressurized to the inside of the old pipe, and then you use one of various techniques to harden it in place, and it in essence replaces the original pipe.
So, I mean, is it susceptible to the same kind of problems?
No, it is not. Since it's a synthetic felt liner, it's think of it kind of like a fiberglass material is what it kind of looks like, and it has a very long lifespan. We've used this technique for quite some time now, and it sure beats having to dig up the pipeline in front of the high school, down Kearns, down the rail trail. And I might mention that our pipeline is underneath all of those wetlands along the rail trail. And if we were not to use this technique, we would have to drain those wetlands and dig all that up, including the mine tailings.
So what kind of impacts will we have then in terms of traffic and then also maybe along the rail trail?
Yeah, we will have some impacts. You'll see the pipeline on top of the ground. It'll be marked. We have worked with UDOT, and they gave us permission to put the bypass line through a storm drain underneath 248. Otherwise, we would have had to put it through the pedestrian tunnel. It wouldn't have prevented people from using it, but you'll have like a 10-inch pipe going through there. So you'll see it on top of the ground. It'll be on the edge of the rail trail. We will not be closing down the rail trail, but there will be construction taking place with some heavy equipment, moving up and down the rail trail, as well as the north side of Kearns and the south side, because it moves the pipeline. It's on the north side, then it flows to the south side. So there will be some disruption, but it should be minimal. And again, we should be through in approximately 30 days if the weather holds.
Okay. And again, it really wouldn't have any impacts then on Kearns Boulevard itself with the commuters?
Other than heavy equipment, on the side of the road, there'll be some disruption. We might need to get into one or two manholes, but it should not result in any type of road closures.
Okay. So are you doing this by sections then?
We do it by sections. Again, this is a multi-year project for the full 7.3-mile pipeline. This phase of it is 1.4 miles. Next year, we'll do some additional phases. This is kind of the critical section of this project, or phase of this project, because the school district will be working in their area. The rail trail is going to be repaved. UDOT's going to be doing some work on 248. So we kind of squeezed in this small little window here to get our work done before others do their work.
Yeah. So any danger with a temporary pipeline with, you know, some nasty material inside of it?
We have redundant systems, and once we start bypassing, there'll be people on site 24/7 until it's done.
Oh. What, just to make sure that they're...
Because they need to operate the pumps, and they need to be on site, and we require them to physically be there to monitor the bypass pumping so that if something goes wrong, they're there to fix it. And again, we have a full backup redundant system parallel to the one that the pipeline it'll be operating, just in case something goes wrong.
Okay. And in terms of smell, the fact that it's above ground, is that going to cause any...
No, there's no openings in the pipeline, mm-hmm. so there should be no odors.
Okay. And the cost for this project?
This phase is $1.65 million. The total cost for the entire pipeline, again, we completed one phase last year. We'll do another next year. It's around $12
million. Wow. Again, yes. All paid for through...
This is all paid through your monthly wastewater fees.
Okay. And then why now? I mean, is the pipeline in danger of?
Well, it's not in danger, but we don't want to get to the point where it's in danger of failing. And this is a very large pipeline. This is the type of pipeline you simply cannot permit to fail. You can't wait until it gets to that type of condition. But we have been inspecting this pipeline for quite a few years now, and it is aging, and it's time to rehabilitate it.
Okay. And again, you say these liners will last for how long?
I personally was involved in a liner that was installed many years ago, and they went back and looked at it, and it looked almost brand new some 30 years later.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's intended to last as long or longer than the original concrete pipe.
Okay. So the press release said that you didn't expect things to be finished until like the end of September. What's that?
Well,
you're saying 30 days now.
Well, 30 days to do the section right along Kearns, the section along rail trail going down to the water treatment plant will take a little bit longer, and we should be through by end of September on that section. So the real, I'm going to say the congested area along the high school and all, we'll be through with that in 30 days. And once we get past the little park, I forget the name of the park, but anyway, once we get to that point, that should be completed in 30 days, and then the rest will be until August, September.
Okay. Anything else you want to tell us about?
No,
that?
We just ask people's for their cooperation, and there certainly will be some disruption. This won't be a project that will not have any disruption. But we've tried to design it and use a technique that minimizes that. It certainly beats having to dig up the old pipe and install a new one. If you got any questions, give us a call, and we'll be glad to come out and talk to you about it. We'll start up this week.
Okay. We'll see it soon.
Hey, thank you, Leslie.
Hey, Mike, thank you. KPCW News Time now, 8:18. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, the Park City Council will be holding two meetings this week, today and tomorrow. Today's meeting begins with a work session starting at 3:10 to discuss funding the Central Wasatch Commission. In the studio, I've got City Manager Diane Foster. Joining us later will be Jed Briggs with the Budget Department. Good morning.
Good morning.
So you didn't have a meeting last week, but two meetings this week, just knowing that it would have been a 10-hour meeting if you hadn't broken it up?
Yeah, we didn't actually initially plan on this when the schedule. We typically do the schedule in October the year prior. And the council's been busy, and they've been asking for a lot, so we just have so many items on the agenda. We've been regularly having 8 to 10-hour meetings, and this agenda, even though we've got a meeting on June 6th, that meeting is already full. It's going to be an 8-hour meeting. We simply could not get through everything. So we've got back-to-back meetings, and yesterday Councilmember Nan Worrell and I were discussing it, and we both realized it was a terrible idea.
Let's see. The Assistant City Manager providing an update on the Central Wasatch Commission. They're recommending that Park City put in $100,000 for this. So I mean, is there a recommendation to do so or not?
Actually, right now, and the reason it's on work session is the council already approved the funding for this. However, it's always good to do a check-in, and Councilmember Steve Joyce had asked for an update on this. So the executive director, former Salt Lake City Mayor Ralph Becker, will be here and will be here to give us an update.
Okay. Why do you think it's important that Park City participate in this?
For me, there are two primary reasons to be involved in this process. One, well, maybe three. One is that it is a very good process that is looking at the Wasatch Mountains. And obviously, they have different traffic issues in the Cottonwood Canyons than we have here. However, looking at this holistically is important. And being the second reason is I always, as the famous saying, if you're not at the table, you might be on the menu. And so I think defending Park City's interests are very important. And as you heard last month in the county council meeting, the strange reappearance of the tunnel. While we don't think that's real and we don't believe that any of our partners support that, and certainly the Park City Council doesn't support it, we want to be there at the table and defending that. And then third, and very important, is that we think we've got our money's worth. If you look at just the $400,000 alternatives analysis that Caroline Rodriguez from the county led, that process, that was $400,000 process that the county or city did not have to pay for. And actually, that has a, not only was that important to figure out what does the community want on that road, and what we heard loud and clear was do not add more lanes for cars, and do have dedicated lanes for buses and bicycles. And that has a direct financial benefit in that as the county starts the next step in the process to go to the NEPA or the National Environmental Policy Act process, it actually reduces the cost of that because they don't have to do certain steps that are required by NEPA because this analysis has already been done.
All right. Sustainability staff will present the next of its three municipal carbon emissions report to council. This time, we're talking transportation. What the report shows is that diesel emissions have gone down. However, emissions from electricity gone up as our bus fleet transitions to all electric. So when we get all of our electricity from renewable sources, that will eventually go to zero. But now it seems to be a slow process, including building a perhaps new solar farm by Rocky Mountain. So when is that going to happen? By 2020?
Well, the good news is that it's already started to happen in that the House Bill 411 was the first step that we needed to have happen this year that allowed for Rocky Mountain Power to build a facility for a community. And frankly, Lou Carton, our environmental sustainability manager, he was hopeful that it would pass this year, but didn't really expect us to do as well as it did. And we're seeing other communities in Utah be highly interested in this, not only because it makes sense environmentally, but also it makes sense economically. We think that we're going to, particularly over time as costs go up, the cost of renewables are becoming very cost competitive. So we believe that when this comes out, it will be either slightly more or the same price as what you have electricity now. And it's important to also know that there's an opt-out provision. So if people decide that they don't want to have renewable electricity at their home, they can choose to not have it. And I will say Park City is one of the highest percentages of blue sky and subscriber solar subscriptions for Rocky Mountain Power in the entire state. So we think it'll be well received.
So what is the city going to do to make our snowplows and other non-transit vehicles more efficient?
We're looking to go electric with those as well. Lou Carton is also keeping tabs on that industry. The technology's not there yet. It's also not far away. I think the fact that we have so many electric bus manufacturers now makes it so that we see that on the horizon, and we believe we'll get there. One of the things that's nice about an electric engine is there's a lot of torque with it, and that's one of the things you need in something like a dump truck and a snowplow.
All right. Let's see. For those who are interested, the council will conduct the annual Sundance debrief at 4:25 today. Anything the staff's proposing that we change for 2020?
I think probably some of the biggest changes will be in Old Town and just how we manage traffic. We did have a problem on the first, I believe it was the first Saturday. We had contracted to have folks out there and preventing people from going down Old Town streets, particularly Lyft and Uber, the transportation network companies that were not allowed to regulate. We had a problem. And so that caused some issues that we didn't anticipate because we had contracted to fix those ahead of time. So we'll be on top of that. I think that's probably one of the biggest things. I think when we look at Sundance overall, it's a thanks to the community, to Sundance, and to city staff. That coordination of those three parties makes Sundance work.
So are we going to then need to patrol then access then into those Old Town streets?
Very much so. And in fact, that's what we did during most of the festival this year, or during the peak time of the festival, is having folks out on Park Avenue, by King Road, all those areas, Hillside, making sure that we're sending commercial traffic and not allowing people to use streets as cutoffs. And during the Sundance, that's absolutely appropriate.
Demolition begins soon on the Spiro Water Treatment Plant to make way for the construction of the Three Kings facility, which will be the first net zero water treatment plant. Can you tell us what features make that way? I mean, I'll bring Clinton as well for an update, but...
Sure. I think one of the favorite features that makes it net zero is the fact that we're putting micro hydro in the pipe that comes from Judge. So as part of our stipulated compliance order with the state, we're required, the reason we're building this plant in the first place is to improve stream water quality. And that's the state came in and said, we want Park City to do this. The city council at the time agreed to do it. And so Judge Tunnel will have a microhydro in it. And microhydro, unlike the sun and wind, it's 24/7. So it has a great ability to offset. There'll also be solar and importantly, just building energy efficient. So making sure we have proper insulation, windows in the right place, those kind of things.
So how is this construction going to impact the golf course? We know it's already shut down that driving range.
It has shut down the driving range, and the other piece that will be impacted is one of the holes would become 11. Hole 11 is going to become a par 3 just for the purposes of construction staging during 2020 through 2022, and then it'll go back to, I believe it's a par 4. So that is going to be an impact.
Well, let me jump in here with you. Jed, golf course fees later on in the budget discussion on Thursday scheduled to go up, including a bucket of balls for the driving range from $8 to $10 for a large bucket. Also just the golf green fees. As we mentioned, that the range is closed due to construction. So are we trying to make up lost revenue by increasing the fees there?
Well, the golf fund is it's its own enterprise fund, essentially, so it has to pay for itself over time. So it's really important that the revenues that are coming in are paying for the expenses. And so when there are these little kind of offsets, when the revenues aren't where they need to be, then we do look to increase.
Yeah, but shouldn't the water fund be paying for that, since it's the water it's the water treatment plant that's causing the decrease in the golf course?
Well, I think part of these fees are just increasing. They're part of the general increase that we've been kind of projected over the last several years. But we have been talking with Clint about other impacts to the golf fund and saying, hey, if we're impacting the golf course itself, should the water fund pay for it a little bit? I don't think we've come to a resolution necessarily on that, but that's something that we are talking about right now.
Okay.
And the one exception is the golf maintenance building.
Yeah.
Because that had to move as part of it was in the Three Kings Water Treatment Plant. It will not be in the new treatment plant. So Gulf Water Fund is paying for that.
All right.
Yep.
I'm going to get back to some of those fees in just a little bit. But here, finishing today's agenda, after selling all of the affordable housing units, the King's Crown Project there has had a difficult time selling the attainable units, having sold only 2 of the 8. Staff recommending that the area median income limit be removed from the sale of these last 6 units. And it sounds like the city would be giving up on a critical priority goal here in favor of, you know, private developers selling units.
I don't think it's a giving up. There are still deed restrictions on the property, so they are not going market rate. So they're still, and there are also general you can't own other property, things like that. So it does limit it to whom it's sold. However, if you look at where these properties are priced, according to the 2017 housing assessment, you actually have to earn over 210% of the area median income, which is around $208,000 to be able to afford one of these. The reality is that's a niche. That is still a niche in our community about having a piece of property available to you for under $700,000. It's really difficult to find property, and so staff believes this is important to do. Also, it's a unique property. It's ski in, ski out, and we want to have people in the community who are full-time year-round, right? You can't buy this as a rental, for example, and so having people who live year-round at the resort is also important.
All right. Taking a look now at the Thursday, May 30th agenda. Again, another budget update. Before we jump into that, I guess the first is the news of another Public Works reorganization.
Yeah, we actually did. So Blake Fonsbeck left the city in January, and at the time he oversaw transit, public works, fleet, parking, and building maintenance. And one of the things that I realized is that's too much for one person to oversee. And what was good is Blake spent most of his time focused on transit, which was appropriate given that more than half of the city's employees work in transit. But I made a decision to, and we're making a recommendation to council, to reform transportation planning and transit. They had been split when Kent Cashel, we didn't have anyone specifically focused on transportation planning historically. And when Kent Cashel and I started to see that traffic was becoming an issue in Park City, moved him over to MARSAC and focused him exclusively on transportation planning for the last 2 years he was at the city. Now we're pulling that back together and recommending that Alfred Knotts oversee transit and transportation. He's been doing that since January, and it's going quite well, and the county also seems pleased with that as well. In addition to that, splitting off Public Works as its own entity and Clinton Troy Daly sharing that responsibility. So that's streets, stormwater maintenance, parks, and building maintenance they're overseeing.
So in terms of new job, I mean, is anyone losing a job, or is we're adding another position to it? I mean, what's the bottom line here?
As part of this, we had in transit specifically, we had changes to four positions because we also saw it as an opportunity. We're putting in a more traditional transit structure. So we're advertising now, and we've started interviews for a transit manager. Soon after that, we'll start interviews for an assistant transit manager. So we are making some changes to that as well.
So what does that look like to the budget then?
So if we looked at just the transit fund itself, if you look in there's an attachment in the staff report that kind of goes through and highlights every single position that's changing. But if you look at all the changes that we're proposing in the budget, it's about a $200,000 increase over the current fiscal year.
Okay. Talk also about the proposed fee changes. Water impact fees going up, water rates also going up. Can you tell us how much?
Yeah, the proposal right now is to have the water rates go up by about 3%. Again, this is part of a long-term plan to make sure that the water fund is in a good financial position over the course of several years. We started doing this many years ago, but with all of the new construction that we're seeing, you know, we talked a little bit about the Three Kings Water Treatment Plant, other water quality projects, Creekside Water Treatment Plant. All of these different water treatment plants require more funding. And so 3% is actually on the lower end, traditionally, of what we've seen over the years.
Okay. But this was interesting. Now, parking fees are going down, and those are for the people who get parking citations. How come?
So the parking rates are changing based off of some state code. So this is something that, as we always try to be in compliance with state code, they made some changes in terms of how we do parking rates for the entire state. And so that was something that was actually told by us that we needed to make sure that we were following and being in compliance with.
Okay, because I was really surprised to see why you would ever give a person who parks in one of the blue disabled spots a deal on doing it. I mean, it was like you're reducing it by almost half or a third. It was substantial.
Right.
Because you have to.
Right. Hmm.
Okay. We are going to increase fees for tennis and pickleball.
Yeah. So I kind of want to speak to the philosophy a little bit of fees and rates. You know, we try as hard as we can to make sure that recreation itself is funded with end users. But if we did that, then we would charge them 100% of the actual cost to do the service. However, since it's a municipal service for recreation, for ice, that is subsidized by the general fund, which is property taxes and sales tax, and that's a 30% subsidy, so we're looking at 70% cost recovery. And so as we look at that over time, we want to make sure that the rates are where they need to be. We want to keep it affordable, but also, you know, we want people that are using it to pay as much as possible. So it's a kind of a balancing act a little bit.
Okay. The budget's scheduled for adoption when?
June 20th.
Okay. And we're about most of the way through the...
Yeah, so we have this Thursday, and then we'll have another one on June 6th where we're going to talk about outstanding budget issues, any kind of budget policies, that type of thing, and then we'll look to adopt on June 20th.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anything else you two wanted to add?
It is coming up. Thankfully, it's not raining today, so we're coming up on people riding their bikes. Just one of those things, be aware, and road respect goes a long way.
Diane Foster, Jed Briggs, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks.
Well, two-time Olympian Doug Lewis and his wife Kelly, a former world-class ski racer herself, offering their one-week day camp known as Elite Team Camp here in Park City this year. They join me now in studio. Good morning.
Morning,
good morning,
Leslie.
And you got our name right, Elite Team.
So most of the camps are run out of Vermont, and that's what, where you're from?
Yeah, we started those 27 years ago, and as soon as I retired from the Olympics, I had finally... figured it all out, so I said, let's pass it on to the kids and to the kids growing up. So we started Elite Team Camp, focusing on the complete athlete, sports physiology, sports psychology, and sports nutrition. Because if you look at me, I'm not a huge guy, but I was able to make it to the Olympics, won a bronze medal at the World Championships. So I really believe in teaching the complete athlete, and so that's how we focus our camp.
Okay. Is this the first year in Park City?
We've actually been here three other years, I think in 2013 and 2014 and 2016. So we took a little hiatus, but we're back now for a one-week camp in August, day
okay.
camp.
So why Park City then?
We live here now. We came out here many years ago for other work-related stuff, and although we came for work, we stayed for the weather in the mountains, and we're here now. So we will go back to Vermont and run some camps there, but we've also added another Park City camp here and hope to continue that and grow that in the future years.
Okay, and then in Vermont, you're working at the Green Mountain Valley School Grounds? Is that, it's an elite school?
Yeah, it's a ski academy. Both Doug and I attended GMVS, and so we are based out of the campus. Those camps are overnight camps, so we use the dorms and their whole campus and facility and race performance center and ropes courses, and that's our little bubble there in Vermont. And when we're here, we'll be at the UOP.
Okay, and then so what are you going to be offering then for that 1 week?
That 1 week?
Here in August.
Yeah,
in
so we'll do everything from... running up the stairs at the OP, the big hill. We'll be doing the ropes courses. We'll set up a lot of obstacle courses. Basically, if you think about it, we'll focus on activities trying to teach the sports physiology side. So agility, strength, mobility. And then everything we do is not only a lot of fun, but has some kind of sports psychology message. So if it's an obstacle course, we'll test the kids on visualization or memorization. If it is carrying a 20-pound rock up to the top of Park City, it's about grit. It's about perseverance. So we try to tie in that mental aspect, which is so important in sports, to all the physical fun we have.
Okay, so who is this for? I mean, all athletes then? Or
it really is. It's open to all young athletes. This camp is for 8 to 13-year-olds. And it really, we're ski racing was our background, so we attract a lot of ski racers, but is really open to any young athlete. Everything that we do is pertinent to any sport. Whether you're working on, power, strength, agility, or the mental skills, or the nutrition, any athlete can benefit from that. And there's just a wide variety of cross-training activities. It's fun, it's high energy, and the kids dig it. They just love it. So that's what we do.
So how many can you take?
We're 45. Okay. We'll be maxed out here in Park City for that.
Okay. And not overnight now, but maybe in the future, I guess, if we've
we actually have done some overnight camps, and we love doing those because we really are able to get focused with the kids, and we have them 24/7 for a week straight, and it allows them to, we say no cell phones, so we unplug from that, we take away all those distractions, and we can really have this intense fun experience where it makes a really huge impact. So we do love the overnight camps for that reason. But for here, for this year, we're doing the day camp, 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m.
Okay, full day. The cost then of the camp?
It costs us $550. It's about $110 a day. They get dropped off at 8:30. We'll pack a lunch, but it is full on till 4:30. The kids will sleep very well every night. So parents, that's another bonus for sending your kids. But yeah, we're running this through the Park City Ski and Snowboard Education set up their registration, but it's open for any athletes. We've already had some golfers, a lot of lacrosse players, and some baseball players sign up as well as the skiers.
Okay. Any scholarships available?
Yeah. You know, if somebody needs a little financial assistance and some help, just ask. We'll do our best to help you out for sure.
Okay. And then registration is what, online?
Yep, online. You can go to eliteteam.com, and there's a link there that'll send you over to the Park City registration.
And okay. Elite Team is spelled ELITEAM, kind of a combo word, eliteteam.com, and all the info is there. And we're pretty excited to be back running a camp in Park City.
Okay. Anything else you want to add?
Just that it's for all athletes, and one thing that they can do if you're interested, just to get psyched about it, is we ask all the kids to bring a rock that weighs their age. So a 12-year-old brings a 12-pound rock. So go find a rock and start working out, and we'll see you in August.
Okay, Doug and Kelly Lewis, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie.
You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, the third annual Monster Drawing Rally returns to the Kimball Arts Center June 6th. In the studio with details from the Kimball, I have Amy Roberts along with Jocelyn Scudder from the Park City Summit County Arts Council. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Amy, we'll start with you. So what is a monster draw?
So a Monster Drawing Rally is equal parts chaos and creativity. We've got several artists, over 40, who come in and do a live art-making event. They have about 50 minutes to create and finish a piece, and then those pieces are immediately available for sale for $50. And if one of those pieces has more than one hopeful buyer, it's a luck-of-the-draw style format. So it's not how much you can spend or even how badly you want that piece of art. It just happens to be on the luck of the card that you pick.
Okay, so Jocelyn, you were the one that lined up the artists here?
Yes, so the Arts Council worked on cultivating artists this year, and we're thrilled to announce that we have 41 artists participating, local and regional, from Summit County and also Salt Lake, which is different this year, which we're really excited to kind of connect those two creative communities and see some new talent this year. And we have seasoned artists, established artists, and emerging artists, even some youth artists that are going to be participating. So I think there's going to be a little something for everyone. And something I really love about this event is it really does break down barriers for art collecting. So if someone feels intimidated by art collecting, this is a really fun way to kind of experiment with it. Maybe buy an art piece that you think is semi-affordable. And, you know, again, like Amy said, it's luck of the draw. So it doesn't matter how much money you have in your pocket. It really kind of levels the playing field for art collecting, which is kind of fun.
So if you want one and three others do, and you get picked instead of me, do I get my $50 back? Or
you only pay if your card is the one that's chosen.
Okay.
So yeah.
Okay. All right. So is it a fundraiser for the Kimball?
It's a fundraiser for both Kimball Arts Center and the Park City Summit County Arts Council. We split the proceeds.
Okay. And who's invited? Anybody?
Anyone can come. Everyone's invited. We would love everyone to bring, come out, bring your family, bring your friends. Your children are welcome. It's a great activity, and it's inspiring. To me, it's so fascinating to watch the level of talent that we have there, be able to create a piece in less than an hour. It's just absolutely amazing.
Yeah, I think what's really unique about this is you can spy on the creative process. And so that's an interaction that you don't normally have with artists. Usually you see the finished piece on the wall. And so what makes this really unique is you get to see the artist's process, and it creates a deeper connection between the artist and someone who really likes the art, or someone who's just feeling inspired. So we encourage, you know, kids love this event, adults alike. So we have families come out all the time. We'll have food provided by Boneyard. Thank you so much, Boneyard. And there's going to be a cash bar, some music. And again, it's a little chaotic, but there's a lot of creative energy, and we love it. And it's only chaotic because there's a little bit of a silent or a live auction. So
it's designed to be chaotic,
yeah,
by
exactly.
Nature. And I should say, if somebody really falls in love with a piece or a particular artist's style, We do have a silent auction. Most of the artists are contributing a piece to the silent auction, and we split the proceeds with the artists. So in that format, you will be able to... It is how much you can bid if you'd like that piece.
It's traditional style auction.
And so the artists, tell me about, I mean, are they all painters or, I mean?
Yes. So these are all 2D artists. And that's really, we can only, it's due to the format of the event. We package everything up, wrap it up in plastic sleeves, put it on the wall, silent auction or live auction it off, and then sell it. So unfortunately, sculpture doesn't really translate to how quick that process is. But we do actually, we have some photographers participating who use their photography as inspiration for their drawings. So we do have kind of an interesting mix of artists. And some of our artists are multimedia, so they draw, but they're also sculptors. So it's a great mix, and we're excited to give them a platform to share their creative talent.
Okay, and they just bring all their own materials?
So the Kimball provides some materials. We have paper, but a lot of artists, and I respect this, they have particular materials they like to use. So some bring their own, and yeah, it's kind of fun to see what everyone brings. So we encourage everyone to come out. Again, this is it's a ticketed event, and you can find tickets on either of our websites, on KimballArtCenter.org or PCSCArts.org, or even on Facebook. You can just search Monster Drawing Rally. It's right there, and there's a link to the tickets.
And we say buy them now because the event almost always sells out, and the ticket prices go up at the door.
Okay. So is it kind of elbow to elbow in there? I mean, 41 artists? That's
Yeah.
Or do you have them upstairs? Or
No. They're all in the main gallery. We set up long tables, and they're all, you know, into the process and into their creation. And you can literally be looking right over their shoulder as they go about their drawing or painting.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
I don't think so. Just this is June 6th, next Thursday from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Kimball Arts Center. And again, visit our website, pcscarts.org or kimballartcenter.org to buy tickets.
And Kimball Arts Center is located at 1401 Kearns Boulevard.
Okay. Amy, Jocelyn, thanks for your time.
Thank you.